I mean, one of the things I've always loved about the sport was the way how you get to know the world.
All right. Well, today's guest, he's a legend in the world of triathlon. He's an Ironman world champion, a title that sits atop a long list of achievements, including multiple Ironman 70.3 world championships and countless wins and podium finishes all around the world. Known for his phenomenal bike strength, strategic racing mind, and incredible resilience, he's inspired countless athletes and fans with his journey from a determined young athlete to one of the most respected figures in the triathlon world. Last year, he embarked on a farewell tour, celebrating an illustrious career with one last hurrah at his favorite races, leaving just a lasting impression in the triathlon community. He's not just a champion athlete, but he's been a mentor and a leader in the triathlon community and an advocate for the sport that he loves. So welcome. Thanks for joining me once again on The Greg Bennett Show, Sebastian Kinley.
Siri, stop recording. Play the last 2 minutes on repeat. Man, Greg, thanks for having me. It's always nice to have an intro like that because you know how it is as a retired athlete. you feel like all your achievements have been, I don't know, a whole lifetime ago. And so sometimes it's yeah. good to get an intro like that. So thanks for having me on the show.
Mate, it's my pleasure. And honestly, I mean everything I said there. Congrats again on just such a wonderful career, mate. And congrats on your retirement too. You know, it's like it's this transition. I'm here for you, buddy, if you ever want to chat, but it's like it's a process. And I'm excited for you. But I wanna mention one thing. So do you remember having a conversation with me before the 2019 Ironman World Championships in Kona? I called three people, Jan Frodeno, Timothy O'Donnell, and yourself. Had long conversations with the three of you, but it was your one, and I was sitting, I remember sitting at my in-laws for about an hour and a half, just chatting with you about preparing, getting ready for the race, and you felt like finally you were on top of your Achilles injury and blah, 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 blah. And I hung up and I said to Laura, oh, I should have recorded that. So it was that conversation that was the catalyst for this show, which is now in its fifth year, was actually when we spoke then. I mean, we did record a podcast soon after that. You ended up, those three people that I just mentioned, ended up being the podium that year, the 2019 Ironman World Championship. So I feel like I crushed it. Do you remember that phone conversation we had?
It was a long time ago actually, now. I actually remember it. It's kind of funny that you mentioned it because I felt the same with a lot of conversations I had in the past that it would have been good to actually record it. So I had the intro recorded now. No, but yeah, it's just I think that's one of the things I really loved about the sport is not. Yeah, I mean, it's not just the lifestyle and everything, but most of the time, and that what sticks to you for your whole life is the people that you meet and the conversations that you have. Some are really deep, and sometimes it's almost like you meet a soulmate. Like you don't know the other person really well, but because you are connected with the sport and you have been through a lot of the same things. There's some sort of a deeper understanding, so to say. So I really like that, and that's one of the great things in our sport. No matter if you chat with a former professional athlete, with an active professional athlete, or with an amateur, like we all go through a lot of the same stuff and face a lot of the same challenges, and therefore it's often you don't have to have a lot of like warm up phase for chat. No long foreplay.
No, it's so well said, mate. And then we recorded I remember when I started this show, I reached out to about 20 of you and said, hey, if I start a show, would you come on? And all of you said, yeah, I'll come on, we record it. And you were one of my very first episodes that I recorded. And I was obviously a bit rusty, I think, at the time, but you were very generous with your time. But I remember one part of that conversation, and I've shared it several times since, and it talks about the competitive nature of us as kids, when we were kids. And I'll never forget you saying that you were playing ping pong, yeah, table tennis, and you were so, your parents were trying to find an outlet for you because you had all this energy. And anyway, you had made the city final or town final in a tournament.
A very small town, but
you made the final. So you're a legendary ping pong player, and you lost and you flipped the table. And then I said, who'd you play? And you said, it was my brother. And it's a story I've shared because I just think you were very open, you know, and it was like, I love that kind of a story. And so cool. Have you beaten your brother in ping pong recently?
We have not played for a very long time. I think it's quite good that you mentioned it because it probably would be time for a rematch. And maybe on a mental side of things, he would probably still be able to find ways to trigger me and maybe make me lose. But on a fitness standpoint, I think I can beat him. But
Are you still fit? Have you kept fit since this year? I mean, I saw you doing some competitions.
Absolutely.
It's not CrossFit. What's it called that your competitions High are
Rocks.
Doing now?
It's
High Rocks. That's right. Yeah.
I love it, man. It's really cool. I think it helped me also a lot with retirement because that's actually one of the things that I'm definitely proud of is how I ended my career because it's not easy and it's not easy to find the right time and mm-hmm. I mean, find a sense to get up in the morning and stuff like that. And mm-hmm. I have a really good balance. And I think from a general understanding of what fitness means, I'm probably fitter than I've ever been in my whole career.
Well, what is High Rocks?
Tell
us what High Rocks is.
So it's a standardized competition where you always run 1 kilometer and then you have a station and the stations are ski erg, sled push, sled pull, burpee board jumps, lunges, farmer's carry, row erg and wall balls. And so it's a total of 8K running and 8 stations. It takes approximately an hour if you're like pretty good at it. And Lance just picked it up.
I just saw that. I actually, when you said that, I knew you'd done it because I follow you on Instagram or wherever you're posting this. And I knew you'd done it a couple of months ago. I saw you doing it. And then recently I saw, Lance Armstrong's, you know, and I thought, well, hang on, if Lance is doing it. He's my age. He's about 6 months older than me or whatever. I'm like, okay, the 50 plus category is just going to get serious now.
there's also doubles. So you can also do a double where you have to stay together for the whole competition. So you have to run the same pace, but you can basically take turns on the stations. And so, if you're ready, we can kick Lance's ass. I think if he's doing it,
I'll be dragging you down, mate.
I think this is an official...
You don't want me as an old man on your team.
You just have to run. I'll do all the stations for you.
I've just got to run. Again, you don't want me on your team. The one thing when I retired, a bit like you, when I retired, the first thing I started doing is really hitting the gym. I wanted to be, it's not that I was starving myself as an athlete to be skinny, but you know, you end up being a fairly lean individual and, you know, I think I weighed 67 kilos at race weight kind of thing. And then I just wanted to be like my older brother who was big and powerful and strong. And so I just started lifting. And I always told Laura, look, I can put on muscle really quick, you know, and as a triathlete, that wasn't always good, right? You don't want to be carrying excess muscle. But so within 6 months, I'd already piled on about 10 kilos. And then now I'm up to about, I'm probably around 80 kg, but I like it. I like feeling kind of like, I mean, I'm not big, obviously. I'm not a big guy, but I don't know. It was a nice change rather than just running 100K weeks and everything.
Absolutely. I feel you 100%. I mean, I don't want to be like Ryan Hall, but...
no, that was the extreme. Yeah, that was the extreme. Yeah.
I think also... I mean, I'm not sure if this is a healthy way, and I'm not sure if this is possible, like in a natural way. But what I really loved about the High Rock thing is also it's super intense, and I think what we all like, and I guess you are no different, is just the feeling after exercise. You know, like you're a little bit archy, but it's not like bad. You just feel like good, you know, like you're happy to just lay on the couch and enjoy the food and stuff like that. But I don't want to do like 7-hour bike rides for it anymore, you know. It's and I still do, I will still do some gravel racing this year.
I saw that on your Instagram. You've signed up for a race, gravel
actually
race.
A couple of races this year. But I mean, so originally my idea was, when I set up this retirement plan, I was like, man, and then I'm gonna go on and win the Lifetime Series, and I'm gonna win Unbound, and at that time, I think it was still an option. I mean, it was like, okay, you have to ride the whole day at 300 watts more or less, and so the whole high rolling resistance takes a lot out of the tactics that's involved in group rides and cycling races. But yeah, I mean, the sport developed so fast, and there's like no chance. I will still be able to maybe do well in the, funny enough, in the shorter stuff now. But yeah, also climbing. I mean, like you said, is my natural weight was probably 72. My race weight was 72, and now I'm 78, and I feel good. And yeah, just like you said, it's like, you know, when I'm traveling now and I do some of the other 60% of my life besides sport, and you arrive at the hotel and you're like, oh, I mean, it's like 8 in the evening. I don't want to go for a run. Push-up challenge, 15 minutes, as much as you can. Like, it's like completely nuke yourself off. You can do something like that. And I've never done that before in my whole career. Like you said, I knew like I can put on muscle relatively quick, which is actually not a good thing.
Yeah, you're a strong build and, too.
And now it's like, oh, nice. Now I'm doing those biceps curls.
I love I do the vanity bicep curl. I'm that guy at the gym that actually stares at myself in the mirror and does it. I'm like, oh, I'm such a tool. But I kind of never done that.
and High Rocks is a great combination of those things. And I've never initially thought about doing it, because one of the reasons why I was sure I couldn't continue with triathlon where my Achilles problems. And in 2020-21, they came back to a degree where it just weared me down. You know, I was still able to do stuff, but it was like fighting against the windmill. You know, it's, you see the other guys and they get better and better, and you know, like, you can still be up there when you're at your 100%, but if you can't do the stuff you need to do to be at 100%, it's gonna get very mentally draining. And so I thought like I would probably not be able to really I thought I would be able to run after like a couple of months of no running and rehab and stuff, but I thought I would never be able to run like at the competition level where I have some fun with it. Actually, with how I planned my last year, I thought, okay, if you fit and if you are performing at a high level, I would have been ready to even take like a cortisone shot in the Achilles, and with knowing that it's going to be the last 2 or 3 races of your career. I mean, you know how you work sometimes as with your athlete mindset. You're like, at one point you're ready to take on anything, just to have this like two or three good last races. And so I was ready for the golden bullet for the Achilles, but didn't need it. And it actually got better over the year, even if I raced a lot. Mm. And now the funny thing is also there's some of the exercises that are really, really demanding when it comes to calf and Achilles. It's, for example, flat push is like really tough.
Yeah.
But that was also like in a different way, but it was part of my rehab program as well, where you just load the Achilles a lot. And I think now I'm just under this threshold where sport is not healthy. So I'm on the healthier side of things. Most of the time, of course, if you have this engine and you're ready to use it, sometimes, especially when it comes to stuff in the gym, I wasn't probably careful enough sometimes. So I did a lot of like squat type of things, just like to really get the legs strong. And so my knees are hurting a little bit, but I know if I'm like do nothing for two, three weeks when it comes to weights, then it's gonna be fine enough. So I'm fit. I'm ready for the ping pong tournament.
I think it's great that you got the mindset. The best thing I got told after I got retired was from my friend Mark Webber, who retired from Formula One driving, and so we had a long chat because I think we retired around the same time, 2016, and he's like, "Greg, you just got to keep moving, and not only in the physical sense, but you need to stay curious. You need to keep learning. You got to keep trying to grow yourself. You got to reach into new opportunities." And I think, actually, I don't know what your thoughts are, but on Arnold Schwarzenegger is one of my great motivators to keep reinventing yourself. You know, as an athlete, we have a timeline. You know, whatever that is, Achilles might take us out, or just the mental duress of having to try and keep the body going. It just wears on you, like you said. And that's what happened to me. Even I was just kind of like tired of doing the little things, right? I loved training hard when I could, but I got tired of doing all the little stuff. But I'm curious as to, you know, I love that you're moving, you're staying fit. Have you sort of thought about what are you doing next for learning, for growth, for potentially work, if you know, that kind of thing? Where are you at with all that? Because it took me a while, so I'm curious as to your thoughts.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's super interesting because for more than 20 years, I would even say for almost 30 years, I woke up in the morning and I knew what I had to do. You know, it's so life's just easy if you have something like that, you know. Of course, it's not that you always burn for it, but it's always there. If you have to make a decision, if you're in doubt, you can always ask yourself, like, what do I have to do to get closer to my goal? And what is my goal? Or what process do I enjoy the most? And it was always, I want to be better in sports. I want to be perform better. I want to win more races. I want to beat more people, and so on and so on. And if you have something like that, it makes you happy, right? Even if you hit the bumps, like even then you have a reason to get up and do something. And I knew that this is also making me tired at one point. I could feel that I wasn't burning with the same desire I had like 15 years ago or 10 years ago. And I knew that I can't just switch, retire from sports, and then, I don't know, whatever, like Arnold. Like I got asked from actually three parties if I want to go into politics, there's no lack of like stuff that I could do with 100%. But I think it's very important right now for me to actually not have that. So right now it's really like I would say 30% is okay. I'm a co-owner of a coaching company, Kick-Ass Sports. I have together with Philipp Seibt and Laura Philipp. And then it's the same side on the Bocchi's Bude GmbH, which is a small sport consulting business. We do one or two triathlon races in Germany. We also have our small little podcast in Germany,
Oh, cool.
and that's part of the side. And then, without really offering it, I got into I don't know what you say, keynote speaking. I wasn't really forcing it. I wasn't really advertising for it, but I enjoyed it, and I really like it, but not every week. I can't do that. It's
No.
it also takes a lot of energy for me to be with a lot of people and constantly chit-chatting and all these kind of things. So that's part of what I do right now. And then family, obviously. It's great to be here as a retired athlete when my son is now 2.5 years old. We are gonna move out of our little granny flat where we used to live under the roof of my parents. And
Oh, you've been there
yeah, I've
forever.
been there
You've been there for
forever.
a long time. I remember when, I think we had this same discussion 5 years
Absolutely. You see, it's maybe a
ago.
European thing, I don't know, but I think in Italy, like, the guys often live in the house of their parents. And now we're approaching 40, so I barely missed the 40 mark, but then I'll go finally move out. So,
I love it.
but it's a good time to have more time, and and then I'm still doing a lot of sport with the gravel racing and the Hyrox, and so I've not decided. I'm depending on how I feel, I might even try to really put all my eggs in the Hyrox basket for next year or next season, just for this one season, not for longer.
Is there money in that, or is that just for the physical, you enjoy the physical
Not
challenge?
enough money to, but it is growing like really, really fast. I was in Manchester, 7,500 people raced there. At the beginning,
Oh my
I
goodness.
thought it's not scalable. That's what I thought, because you need so much equipment. But when you're at one of the venues, the great thing is they're in the big exhibition halls, and so all the infrastructure is perfect. You have enough parking lots, like there's a train station and an airport close by. And once it's all set up, it's not a problem. Like, it's one start wave after another. And I think you guys have like a huge event in New York. So for everybody who's interested, I think it's gonna actually be 10,000 people racing there, which is crazy. And so I think it.
So it's almost taking over the CrossFit type crew, right? It's getting
I
digging
would
into
not
that
say
group, or
it's taking over, but the thing is, in so CrossFit, from my standpoint, is not very inclusive. I've trained with a couple of the CrossFit guys, and of course they look at Hyrox as, I don't know, the CrossFit version for weak people or whatever it is, but it's definitely not, because the running is just something that makes it so intense. And therefore, also, I think in general, like the everyday gym customer can do a Hyrox. That's not a problem. But to do a proper CrossFit competition, the movements are very complicated. And I mean, no doubt that these guys are like, I mean, they're super fit, no doubt. But in Hyrox, it's a lot more people can do it. And also for triathletes, I think it's a great addition during winter time and stuff like that. And so it definitely has a huge potential. And I think right now it's the fastest growing sport in the world, because all the people that, I mean, when you ask people what sport are you doing, I just know from a survey in Europe, like, okay, swim, bike, run. But the most answer you get is, I'm going to the gym. But what sport is that? Mm. Like, you can do a lot of stuff in the gym, right? I mean, and for these people, I think HYROX is a great way to compete and test themselves. And yeah, so yeah.
Look, I think so long as people are out there moving, and look, we all get tired of doing certain ways of movement, and so you're looking for new things that are interesting. Like the big sport over here in the US is pickleball. Has really taken off, and I've played once or twice, but I actually enjoy playing tennis with Laura. And it's not to say I'm anti-pickleball. I think it's quite great that people are out there just doing something. And I'm kind of all for, so long as we find something that intrigues us for that period of time that we can, you know, I love that you talked about, you know, as much as you loved having the purpose in triathlon and like that every day, there was a real singular focus. And I was the same as you. I think the one thing when I retired was like, it's like, I kind of miss that little bit of sense of purpose, but I don't miss it because I don't want to become the person that I know I become. Like even a couple of years ago, 2 years ago, when I had a tech company that I built, and as a team, we all said, oh yeah, let's do the Thanksgiving 5K run. That's what you do in the US. It's a, you know, and everybody will send in their times because we were all around the US. And I'm like, okay. Well, I got to get fit. And I didn't just take it on like get fit. Now I'm like, okay, got to get fit. Whereas I should have just gone, look, try and break 20 minutes or something. Like I'm not that fit. Like just get around it. I didn't like who I became even to do a 5K run. I'm a very intense individual when I have a goal, and I don't want to be that person right now. Like I want to be, to your point, I want to be present with my son and my family. I want to be present on some other activities. And before I go all in on something, can I just hit the reset button for a little bit? You know, give me a little bit of time to breathe. I've been so intentional and so purposeful for so many years. It's like, let me breathe. Does it feel a little bit like that for you? Like, just let me.
100%. And the thing is, I mean, I know why you don't want to become Mr. Hyde on that side. Is it's funny because when I raced in New Zealand, I visited Terenzo Bozzoni. Yeah. Probably still remember him.
He's been on the show. One of the, yeah. Love the guy. One of the one real of great the, guys. One of yeah. the 70.3 world champion it. Himself, and, I think.
So, I mean, you probably have chatted with him a little bit, but it's exactly that. Like now he's doing some real estate development, and the thing is, like, what you have to learn is that the world around you doesn't have the same mindset. And if you if you approach the outside world with your mindset, you're probably not going to get laughed back too much, you know? And
you're going to get frustrated. You're going to get frustrated that people aren't operating at the same intensity.
Exactly. And so he told me, like, you would have loved to just work 16 hours a day, you know? And it's kind of like he goes to the construction site with a candle deck on that he doesn't have to make breaks for drinking them. And he's freaking out like somebody smoking during their work time, you know. And but you have to understand that, and you have to, I think, re-socialize a little bit.
Yeah, and you do. The transitions, I've talked about on this show a fair bit, you know, we often talk about transitions for military personnel back into civilian life. But I have a number of mates that were professional hockey players, golfers, a whole bunch of them that are, and a football friend of mine, that are all actually struggling with the transition because they've actually been super high profile. Like triathlon was, in my mind, the perfect level of fame.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? Like we had enough where if you go to a certain event, you get a nice pat on the back, you feel good. But then you go back to you wherever and people walk straight past, you wouldn't know who you are, right? And it's like, and we're going to be forced to have to work again. We're not retiring with tens of millions of dollars. Like at some point, you know, even if we invested well, we still got to keep moving. Whereas a lot of my mates that have done these other professional sports have tens of millions of dollars. They've been treated in a way where they've gone through the back door of restaurants because the fans are so want to be all over them. they've lost all of that. So they're suddenly nobodies with money. It's hard for them. But I think with triathlon, we have a reasonable balance in the sense that you get this time right now to recalibrate and keep fit, keep moving, enjoy some of the coaching and other bits, but also give yourself a little bit of a runway to go, okay, when do I want to pull the trigger on my next thing? And what do I want to really do? And you have this nice little window, but it's not forever. You don't have 20 years to think about it. You have a couple of years, you know? Do you kind of feel like that? Or am I putting, I don't mean to be speaking.
No, you. I would have not answered any different. It's 100% like that, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, mate, I'm excited. I'm excited for you, your journey forward. But I want to do one thing here. I just want to go back. Take me through your last year and the reasoning why you did what you did in the sport. I think it was a great way to announce a retirement and say, I'm going to go do all of my favorite races and where I love the people and everything else. Tell me that whole, how that came about, and then we'll go through what it was actually like.
I mean, one of the things I've always loved about the sport was the way how you get to know the world. I mean, sport enabled me to see the world and to get to know the world, not just, you know, it's something completely different if you're sitting in a tourist bus and see a country, or if you're actually in St. George, Utah, at a Mormon host family, like with 10 people sitting on the table. And they ask you how you feel about Donald Trump. That's how you get to know a country. And that's how you, how you grow as a human being. And so that was always one of the reasons. I mean, during my career, there have been different phases of why I love the sport, you know. And towards the end, it was definitely most of it. It was because of experience like that. And but with the limitations you have with racing and what you can do with racing and triathlon, it's realistically you can do two or three long course races a year plus four or five middle distance races, and that's probably it if you want to be on a very, very high level. And then if you want to make a living with it, it's pretty set where you should go. I mean, the great thing on the non-drafting long course side of things is you can always decide, right? I mean, I can always say like, yes, I want to do something completely different. Like, I don't have to do World Cups or Olympic qualifiers, and nobody else decides where I have to go, but it's still a golden cage, so to speak, where you have to do either Ross or Frankfurt as a German athlete, and then you'll do Kona. And that's most of the times the structure. And and I've did the same races for a long time. And
you won them all, mate. You won
unfortunately
them all.
No, you did. Unfortunately not. I'm still missing a couple.
Well, not them all, but you won the Frankfurt, you won Roth, you won Kona. When I say you won them all.
No, you're right. I mean,
if you talk to any German, especially triathlete, Ironman, and say, if you could have that resume, would you take it? Everyone.
And you know how it is. If you win a few, you always want more. To be honest, in my last year, so when I had this idea of retirement, I think you always, I can say that now, at the time, I think I would have not loved to communicate it, but my goal was to win another two races in Ross, because then I would have won three times in Frankfurt and three times in Ross, and I would have had, I think, 2 second places in Frankfurt and 2 second places in Ross, which would have been like... I think it would have been difficult to reach in the future. And then
I don't think it would have changed much.
You know how it is. Like,
I think for you, it would have felt great.
I mean,
the world is still going to look at you as awesome.
And then I thought I want to win like all the regional championships, you know, like, North American championships and, Asia championships and so on. Blah, blah, blah. But like you said, it would have not changed that much. But Yeah, coming back to your question, I mean, that was sort of the thing. I knew, okay, in 2022, I will have like one last attempt to be as good as I can at the World Championships in Hawaii, which was kind of a funny coincidence that they announced just like 2 weeks later that they now start to rotate from Kona to Nice and so on. So that was good that it was that it worked out for me with the plan, and also with the COVID years. It was great to
Yeah. And you got sixth in your final Hawaii then, right? Can you remember all your results real quick before just we'll come back to your story, but can you remember all your Kona results? You've had the
I mean, I
win.
know
How many
my first
podiums
one
did you get?
was fourth, then third, and then I won it. But then it gets a little bit blurry what happened afterwards.
Okay,
I finished
go on. I
in
can
the
look it
top
up.
10 all the time, beside
Yeah.
2018 where I dropped out.
Yeah,
So
yeah.
that's
That's awesome, mate. It's awesome. It's an awesome resume. Sorry to interrupt. I want you to
No,
keep going
thanks.
through the thought
Interrupt me all the
process with
time
your
if you
stuff.
want to give me some more some
Yeah,
more sugar.
okay. No. More sugar. So long as you're pumping me up, you can interrupt me whenever you want.
And then I knew I want to do a for my last year, I want to do like a big hooray. I mean, it was also at the beginning, I also thought like I wanna cash in big. Like the last year I wanna like get all the primes from all the sponsors. So that was also a reason why I wanted to raise more. Because at the beginning I thought, yeah, I mean, I don't do this like little bit of cherry picking and I gonna win all these races. didn't really happen. Like I won,
It didn't happen as you
no,
wanted, no.
but it was still great, you know. I mean, it was great
Yeah.
experiences and I absolutely loved it, and I would not have changed it in any way, to be honest.
I think it was a great way to do it. I think it gave everybody an opportunity to say goodbye. And it was funny when I retired, I thought, okay, I've done my last race. It was Beijing or whatever it was in 2016. I thought, okay, I'm done. Love the sport, love the people, blah blah blah. Away I go. And it was actually Pete Jacobs. We were in Noosa, and he said, "Greg, retirement's not about you. It's about giving people that have enjoyed the journey on your way a chance to say, see you later." And I was like, "Oh." And so I actually just put out a Facebook and said to everybody, "Thank you, and it's been great." And I've got to tell you, I kept that Facebook message, and those messages from people all around the world. That just said, "Oh, Greg, I remember meeting you, or we did this, or blah, blah." And it was like, I think you even wrote on it. And it was like you had all your peers, right? And it was just like one of the best things I've ever done. I think I've told Crowe to do it because I don't think Crowe's ever fully announced retirement. And I'm like, give your community and people that have been in the sport with you a chance to say goodbye. So the way you did it, by actually going out to the community, they know that this is probably the last time they're going to see you at this race or this event. You're giving them a chance to say goodbye.
100%. And I think honestly, it's exactly because I've seen other guys, professional athletes, retire. And I always felt sorry for them because they never really had this experience. I mean, I was probably at the end, I felt like, oh, yeah, now it's, we're not gonna do a last one. It's really time to now, okay, this is it. we're not milking it anymore. But a lot of the other guys, like they never got to experience what I did. And every one of those races felt absolutely, I mean, honestly, like talking about it, I'm getting really emotional right now because I remember starting the season in Wanaka and being there, and oh man, it was, you know, I was it was just everything was just super great, to be honest. It was just, I don't know, like you said, like meeting a lot of those guys for the first time, but then basically also giving them the chance to say goodbye. And you know, I've seen guys like, I mean, you mentioned Croy, but on the German side, there's Norm Stadler, there's Thomas Hellriegel, all those guys, they they never had the chance I had. Like when I raced in Ross, you know, I was a little bit unlucky with everything, but man, like running into the stadium and also in the evening, they put such a show on for me. My family was there and everything, so yeah, it was just, yeah, it was good. Definitely,
you'll never forget it. You'll never forget it. I mean, right? It's like this.
Yeah. So therefore, it was, yeah, it was really, really cool. Also meeting a lot of those dudes that I've been racing with for a long time amongst the way, you know, and that was, yeah, something really, really special. Like I said, for example, visiting Terenzo when I was in Australia and in New Zealand it was cool, really cool.
There's a strong kinship that happens within the sport of triathlon. As much as we all go out to hammer each other and try and destroy each other and win races, there's a real, like, there is this band of brothers mentality where it's like we're almost going to hell and back together and sharing the stories of survival and that mateship that is created, you know. It's really very, very special. It's not just between the pros or anything else. One of my favorite things was always racing with Laura, and then Laura's brothers all raced, then Laura's dad always raced, and we'd all finish and we all had different stories, and you know, and it was sitting there with a burger and a beer or a Coke or whatever and just sharing your stories of what you went through. And as mates on a start line, whether it was you and I, like I go back to, gosh, 2008 or whatever, when we were having parties in Dallas, and that was the first time I think I met you. And I'm like, I really love this guy. He knows how to race hard and party equally hard. And I think you build up over many, many years, you know that how much each other have suffered to be on the start line and what they went through to get through on the race. And so to be able to go around the world, connect with all your mates, you know, connect with your fans and the people that have been inspired by you for many, many years. It's just so cool, mate. So big shout out. And you got a book that came out of it as well, right?
Yeah.
So tell us about the book and how that all came about.
The book. So we did this.
It's called Let It Go. Is that
Let Go Now.
Let Go Now. I'm sorry. Let Go Now.
So René, it's a good friend of mine by now, because he followed me the whole year. He did all the videos for my YouTube channel. So
cool.
He asked me if I think or if it would be okay, because he had so many great pictures and stuff to make a book out of it. And I was like, oh, René, I'm not so sure about it. You know, it's like, you know, like you said, it's triathlon, you know, it's not American football and so on. I don't want to that you burn a lot of money with this project and stuff like that. And so my wife already made a book and we did that all by ourselves. But it wasn't available in English. So I was like, yeah, on the one hand side, I think would be cool to have something in English. And so he showed me a couple of the pictures and I was like, yeah, they are cool, but yeah, I mean, I don't know. But I told him, it's your choice, you can do it. And then we had this farewell party at the end of the year, basically, where we showed the last episode of the discontinued series and met with some sponsors. I auctioned off a couple of bikes, and so the winners got their bikes there, and René presented the book, and I walked in there, and I've never seen the book before. And so René had all the pictures lined up in this like old German bunker. I don't know. And it looked absolutely awesome. I opened the book and I read the foreword from Jan Frodeno, and I was like, oh,
no way.
This is, I mean, just for myself, it was a super nice present. And again, something that helps you to think back. And book is available.
Yeah, where can people buy it? Amazon or where
I
are they
think
buy
right
it?
now it's
Let
just
go now.
on the homepage from René. So renedomke.de, we can put it in the show notes. But
yeah,
I think
perfect.
He will
Send
sell it on Amazon at one point as well.
Yeah. I saw some of it doing homework for this show, and it looks spectacular with the mirror front. And it's just like and I saw him talking about it. I think he talks about it in your final episode on the YouTube discontinued, which, by the way, people should go check out. It's a really fun, you know, it's a great series. You know, I blast through them at 2x the speed, mate. And it's very hard when you're speaking German to read at 2x the speed, but I went through them. That's a really great series. Very cool. I want to shift gear a little bit. And just reflecting on your career as an athlete. And, you know, we've talked a lot about last year, 2023, and the highs and the joys of that. But are there moments or races that really stand out to you where you go, that was really a career?
Yeah, absolutely.
Super special.
Absolutely. I think, and it's not 2014 World Championships. It's the first time in Ross where I... On very first attempt, I broke the 8-hour mark, and that was a race that really stands out for sure. And then, obviously, the first 70.3 world title in Las Vegas was also something super, super special, because it also kind of marks the first change of guard or... the generations, because I still raced with like your generation, and then
I remember I was in that 2012 race.
Yeah, and I still remember like sitting in this fucking hot tent waiting for the drug test, and sitting there with my wife and all the other like absolutely top guys that I knew from Olympic distance racing and so on and it was absolutely mind-blowing for me to sit there and be actually the best of all these guys in that race.
It's like, I finally made it. I'm finally here. I'm finally doing something.
It's also because
it's really cool.
It came unexpected. You know, I mean...
Yes, my
it's
favorite.
Not,
yes.
It's not that I... It's not that I didn't know that I was capable of theoretically doing it in the future at one point, but I didn't approach the race and I thought like, this is the day where I'm going to be world champion, you know, and it makes it, everything changed after you win your first world title. And obviously like the next time you race there is like, I mean, I was still shell shocked the next time when I raced there, because I thought like, you probably don't have it, and it's not you're not able to deliver that again or whatever, but even 2014, the world championship title in Kona, I knew I will be able to do it, and my goal was maybe not 2014, but with the lead up and everything, the expectations from the outside and myself, they were aligned to like, this dude is one of the guys that can win the race. And when I raced in Vegas the first time, this was definitely absolutely not the case. Like you lead the race, and at one point, 12, 13K into the run, you realize like, hey, I'm actually probably going to win this thing. It's,
it's
totally crazy. There's only one first time, so that's...
I agree. The way you paint that picture, by the way, is it's like I've said a few times. It's like when you have races where you're kind of expected, not expected to win, like you said, but you're pretty sure of yourself that you're feeling good and you're going to go. But the ones where you shock you and suddenly you're almost floating down the finishing line going, oh my gosh, they're cheering for me. And you're reacting to the crowd in a way that's not a performance. Like your hands are thrown up through the energy of emotion. And then, whereas I have these other ones where you're running down the finishing chute and you're kind of throwing your hands in the air, but it feels like a bit of an act, you know, a bit of a show. I don't know. Did you have that same sort of sense?
Yeah, it was, I mean, obviously, it's maybe a little bit blurry when I think back, but it was just, yeah, it was just, yeah, it was just completely crazy for me, because there were, you know, Bevan Doherty. I can still remember sitting in the tent, you know, with Bevan and Craig and I mean, especially Bevan Doherty's feet. They looked so fucked up, man. I can still remember that. And I was like, okay, this sport takes a toll at one point. Man, it was just, I knew all these guys, you know, it's, at that time.
Well, we knew of you, mate. I remember the first time I heard of you, I think it was Chris McCormack. He'd been racing in Europe and he'd raced against you. And he's like, you guys don't even know what's going to hit you.
Yeah.
And then I must admit, because Macri had riled me up before. What was the first year you came and did that race in Dallas? Was it 07 or 08?
Probably 08. Yeah.
So I had you, like, it was one of those, and you would have had this when you get a bit older and they say that some young punk's going to come and, you know, beat you. You're like, no, you go, no. I mean, you thrashed me from there on out, but I think I got one. It was like, big okay. Time. But I remember Macca was fueled me with energy that some German kid drunk was going to come and smash me. And then it was like, okay, I got you there. And then you came back and got me well and truly after that. Do you look back? I mean, you kind of mentioned last year there was a, you know, you would have loved to have won, you know, Roth again. And are there any regrets or ones that you feel like got away from you that maybe you kind of feel like you should?
A lot. Like, I mean, there is like a lot of races where I thought, oh man, I would have loved to go back there and make something a little bit different or whatever. But especially in this last year, it's there's two races, like one of them in France and one of them in Austria, and I got like a penalty in both of the races, and they were 2 weeks apart. And so in the race in France, I don't even know why I got a penalty. The roads were not completely close to traffic, and so there was a car in front of the group and slowed the group down, and we kind of like rode in a bunch behind the car, more or less. So I'm not sure if that was the reason why I got the penalty for drafting. But it made me like really, really, really angry, because that never happened to me in my whole career. Like, I had a couple of close calls, but in those situations, I knew that I actually made a mistake, and that I was like really happy that, Jimmy gave me the opportunity to correct my mistake and not just throw me out of the race, because. Yeah. With, you know, cheating, there's always, in my mind, it's not just breaking a rule, it's also the intention of breaking a rule to get an advantage. Mm-hmm. And well, in this case, I was like really, really frustrated. And then I got a penalty again the week afterwards in Austria. And again, I was like, I lost it. I threw my bike away, and that was the 7-year-old guy playing ping pong again.
we gotta keep you moving. I gotta talk to your wife.
We gotta keep you active. Otherwise, the SWAT team is gonna visit the Kiemler house on a regular basis. In that situation, it was I got so frustrated because. I thought like somebody else decided about my fate, and so that was something this feeling I always loved about our sport, you know, is that there is no judges, you know, it's referees. But during my whole career, I had a very few times when I thought, this wasn't fair or something like that. Everybody's complaining, obviously, all the time. But most of the times, I think judging was pretty good in triathlon. But yeah, sometimes if it's not, then it can be like so frustrating.
It's crazy you had the two. It's crazy you had the two, the right back to back in your final row.
And I just
like, give me a break.
I just had three, I think, in my whole career, and I can remember all three of them. And the other one was actually in St. George, and that's also one of the. I mean, one of the races I would have absolutely love to win. I was there so many times, and that was exactly the year where, I mean, Lionel wasn't racing. I was in pretty good shape, and I think I would have won the race. Sorry, Rudy, but I think afterwards you would have smashed me on every single time. But this year, like you said,
that one you were ready.
I would have.
I know, isn't it funny?
And I think so. Those were three of the occasions where I was in like. But the one in St. George, I also have to say, like, I felt mistreated. But then on the other hand, if I would have been a little bit more patient, it would have been no problem. So therefore, it was my own mistake in a certain way.
You're not the person that's trying. Look, I don't. 99% of the guys aren't trying to cheat. They happen to make bad decisions and put themselves in bad situations. I had one drafting penalty my whole career, and that was back in 1997. And I went and did the Chicago Triathlon, and it was the
stagger. The good old stagger rule.
The stagger rule. So I'm in second place. Yeah, I didn't mind the stagger rule.
Yeah, sure, of course you didn't.
But I remember I was in second place. Spencer Smith was way up the road in Chicago riding on the waterfront. I don't know if you ever raced Chicago, but... And I couldn't see him. He was a good quarter mile, 400 meters in front, you know, that kind of thing. And I'm in second. Go, I'm in second. This is awesome. And a draft master come over and gives me a card. I said, "What's going on?" He goes, "You're not staggered." I said, and he was so far down the road, but he was on the left or the right side, and I was on the right side. And anybody that's done Chicago along the waterfront, you want to be on the right side because that's where the cars are coming past in the lane next to you, which gives you a bit of a draft. So anyway. That was my world of getting caught out in a drafting situation.
There you go.
And it is. It's infuriating. Yeah. But mate, look, some of the lessons that you've learned from your career that you're going to take with you, what stands out and some of the most, I guess, impactful wisdom that you could share from your career that you're going to be able to take into the future now? What are some of the lessons you've learned? Yeah,
I think the most important lesson is... I love freedom, and if you ask the people, hey, do you like freedom? Yes, they all love freedom. But freedom, you have the chance to make decisions, but you have to make the decisions. If you don't make the decisions on your own, somebody else will decide. And if you just wait long enough, you don't have to make the decision, or you can make a better decision, you're wrong. Sometimes you look back and you think, oh, this was a wrong decision. But a lot of people, they are so in fear of making a wrong decision that they don't decide at all. And then somebody else decides.
That's a decision.
And then, and then they are not free anymore. So I think that's one of the things that I learned is if you in the situation that it's about you to make a decision, make the decision. even if it comes with consequences, you know. I mean, when I decided to turn professional, there would have been quite or relatively severe consequences if it would not have panned out the way it did. But at one point it's I would not say it's all or nothing, for sure not. And I would not say don't have a plan B, because if you have a plan B, you're not gonna make plan A work. That's not how it works. But don't be afraid to make decisions is probably the one that's important to me.
I love it's got me thinking about I did some work with Hintsa Performance out of Finland, who work with all the Formula One drivers and teams, and Aki Hintsa always said, you know, his whole thing was at its core is, do you know who you are? Do you know what you want? And are you in control of your own life? And those three questions, it's exactly what you're saying there. If you're not going to take control of your life, somebody else is. And that means somebody else owns your time, which time in my mind is your number one commodity, time and health, right? You got to be, those are the two focus things that you need to control and own. But well said, mate. I want to finish up with final four questions and maybe some rapid fire if you're up for it. But I'm not sure if you've read the email I sent you, but I like to send this one in front. If not, you're going to have to think quick. What would you tell your 18-year-old self knowing what you know now?
Invest more in swimming.
Invest more in swimming. How many world titles do you want? My goodness. I wonder if you were a good swimmer, if you would have been as stronger on the bike, though. I wonder if the desperation to have to catch up after the swim made you such an uber biker, too.
You know, yeah, it's a spider web. You pull one and you don't know how it moves. But yeah, I think it's difficult, to be honest, because would I have changed anything? Yes, I would have changed a lot of things, for sure. I think what I meant with that in a bit of bigger perspective is I didn't really enjoy swimming because I wasn't training with a good group, and that's the main thing. It's like I did not enjoy part of the sport where I could have enjoyed it, which I learned later on, if I would have had a great group around me. Because even in triathlon, a group around can help a lot, especially when it comes to swimming. And I've seen that then later in Australia, in the US, what it does if you have a good squad. And yeah, that's something I would have loved to do, is just move to a place where I have a good group of athletes around me. And it's not just because I thought I would have been a better athlete, but I would have enjoyed it more. Yeah.
Yeah, I love that. That's a great follow through. Really good answer. All right, next one. If you could have dinner with three people, living or dead, ideally not family, but if you really must, you can. But who would they be and why? Three people, and it'll change. Look, the three you give me today.
It's funny because I think you.
I should have said that.
You have asked me this question, I think, last time as well.
Long time. Yeah, so that's one of the first questions.
We have to go back and see if I still answer with the same.
It should be different. Answers. I think it should be different.
Probably it's maybe not that different, but one of them would be Richard Feynman, and I think I probably would have answered that the same. It's it's a great physics guy, and I read a couple of books from him, and he seemed to be a really smart guy, but also somebody that you can actually talk to, which is not, you know, if it's just smart, it's a lot of smart people, but they're probably not fun to have dinner with.
Yeah. That's a good one. I love that.
Oh, there's too many great guys, to be honest. I would love to do that. I think, I mean, like you said, can be family, then I would love to talk to my granddad that I never met from my mother, because I played with his toy railway and I never really got to meet him, and I think I would love to just get to know him. Yeah.
That's really cool. I love that, mate. And look, I'll come along and sit with you if you can't think of a feeling.
Oh, actually, yeah. I mean, somebody out of the triathlon world would actually be super nice, because that's what I always enjoyed, and therefore I really enjoyed my time with Terenzo, and I would have
Yeah.
I would have loved to have a little bit more time, so I probably would pick Tirenzo.
I love it. I love it, mate.
Just like you said, is having burgers and a beer and talking about old stories. So
yeah. The more you leave the sport, I'm now 8 years out, the better you were. You just get better and better. Oh yeah, I was amazing. All right, where do you see yourself then? Look, you know, this is a big question for where you're at in your life now, but where do you see yourself in 5 years from now?
Most likely I will do something again where I can be all in again. I think that's the time frame I need to be mentally willing to go all in on something again. So what it is, I'm not 100% sure. But again, I think it also depends what my wife wants to do. If she wants, you know, to go back to work and do something, then I'm happy to stand back and be the desperate house man. Not a problem. Yeah, and I would still do sport. Most likely, this sort of like hybrid idea.
Yeah,
maybe a little bit more golf, so we can meet for some golf.
Mate, I've just bought my first set of golf clubs. I can hit the ball all right, but go to the range. The guys are really
confident. I don't care. Like, I mean, it's all about the cooler on the back of
therapy,
of the trolley.
100%. I've said to people recently that, oh, golf is boring. I'm like, look, for men, I actually think it's therapy. Yeah. I actually think it's men, I've realized, don't like to have conversations, you know, eyes on each other. You know, it's a bit too confrontational. But if they can be walking side by side or in the golf cart, venting about their issues in the world,
I know what you do in 5 years. You're a best-selling author about a book about golf.
A golf book. I've actually got some golfers lined up for the show coming up.
I read a book about golf, which was super nice. Actually, two.
What was it?
The Fine Green Line and Dream On. They're like really good. I absolutely recommend them.
Fine Green Line and Dream On.
Dream On. In German, it's Träum weiter. So I assume it means dream
it
on.
Out, I'm always looking for books.
It translates good, so I guess, yeah.
Nice, buddy. All right, let's finish off with some rapid fire.
Absolutely.
You ready? I know you probably got dinner waiting. All right,
coffee.
Or tea? What sport other than triathlon would you want to be the best in?
High rocks.
Oh, look at those. I've actually got him on camera, you guys. He's just developed. He's
got
we're showing off our muscles, everybody.
Off guns as well.
Yours are huge. Jeez. Anyway. All right. Well, you've just given me a couple of books recommended, but what is one book that stands out that you would gift to a friend? Like, do you have a book that you really love? And I really ask selfishly, what would one book that you would suggest?
I have to. I don't know the English name, so it's
okay.
It's called Trisolaris Trilogy, I think. It's from a Chinese author, it's a science fiction book. I don't usually read science fiction, but it's really nice. I absolutely enjoyed reading it. I was like really hooked to it, and it has some great, general life lessons, I would say, in it. So I loved it. Yeah.
Cool. All right, well, I might have you send me that over, because I'm always looking for different types of books to upskill myself. All right, one place that you haven't gone that you'd love to go to. You've gone around the world, but is there some place that you haven't gone to you'd love to go to?
Yeah, actually not on planet Earth, talking about science fiction.
Yeah. It's happening, mate. Buddy up with Elon.
Not enough money.
Hey, Elon.
Yeah, I mean, it would be nice to actually make a trip to a planet that's similar to planet Earth, but maybe
I think
Elon Musk generations to do that. So that would be nice. Other than that, man, I want to go back to Wanaka. Yeah, yeah, that was just nice.
We can do some commentary or something. Get yourself on the commentary team. Absolutely. They'll send you down. There you go. Everybody jumps on the commentary team for a few years at post-retirement. Hey, on that, what did you think of the T100?
Oh, now that we are 1 hour and 9 minutes in.
I've warmed you up, buddy. I know you got dinner going, but I'm going to hit you with it.
The short answer. So it's talking about all this experience from an athlete standpoint, it's absolutely amazing, because that was one of the things that I always missed on the non-drafting side, is like this, the same bunch of athletes getting together, racing hard and then enjoying it, being together and stuff like that. So I just did two of the races, and they have been absolutely awesome when it comes to how they take care about the athletes and so on. Obviously, the money is great, and it puts a lot of pressure on the other players in the triathlon world. So it's great for the professional side of the sport. What is really lacking, in my opinion, is the atmosphere. You know, I mean, most of the times it's in places where you don't have a lot of spectators. I wish we have a little bit more integrated into existing races. I did a race in the Basque Country last year, Zarautz Triathlon. Man, it was absolutely crazy, the amount of people. If you would have held a T100 series race there and you would have had a good podcast, you see the broadcast and you have the feeling you're watching something meaningful. You know, if you watch a race on the broadcast and the ranks are completely empty, you think like, oh, I'm kind of a freak, like I'm the only one watching this. So it's absolutely great sport, totally unpredictable. I absolutely love watching it, but yeah.
All right, good mate. Let's wrap it up there. That was I didn't mean to put you on the spot with that. I did have a whole bunch of rapid fires, but I am aware of the time. I also assume you have dinner coming up. You're 6 or 6:30 p.m. there in Germany. But mate, this has been just honestly a real thrill for me to have you back on the show. Really great to connect again. I can't believe it's been almost 4.5 years. I think I've seen you at events in between. I commentated in Slovakia and things. So I think we have seen each other at events and said good day. But, mate, it's been a long time between having you on the show. Don't be a stranger. I think we need to reconnect, you know, both you and Jan Frodeno retiring at the same time. I think it's kind of we need to I'm going to keep an eye on you guys. I'll be here if you ever need a sounding board. But, mate, congrats again. Outstanding career. You know, not just as an athlete, but as a human being, I think that's why you were so loved.
Siri, stop recording.
By all of us, mate.
Thanks, Greg, man. Thanks for awesome, for buddy. Having me really on the show. And we're gonna probably pay you a visit. Nice, round of golf, mate.
You're always welcome, South Florida. I got TO coming down.
That would be good.
Hit a ball together. He's on the speaking tour over here. He's talking to some dentists or something, he told me. So he's on the speaking tour. We'll be catching up in a month. Maybe hit a tennis ball or a golf ball or something. But, yeah, buddy, thanks for joining me. And for everybody listening, you can find all the show notes and timestamps and everything else at bennettendurance.com/media. All right.